We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Mully and Hall. Live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Are you individually looking at quarterbacks differently than you have in your career as a scout?
That's a good question. I think every year you grow as an evaluator. I think you never stop growing in that area. So, there probably are things, and not just with quarterback, with every position, that I feel like we all get better at just with experience. Maybe things you value differently than you valued in the past, just as you have experiences in our league. So I would say yes.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Why did I laugh at that, David?
See,
it's
visceral.
Right. Yeah,
it's instinctive.
Right.
We do that. I don't know why, but it seems like we do that, and maybe it is, as you suggested, because we hear him so infrequently that when we do is sort of a chuckle, like, oh, can you believe that? But I will say this, in all seriousness, you know, the draft is a week from tomorrow, and we enter this week and we talk about the options that we have at our disposal tonight. We're fortunate to have, from a Chicago sports perspective, the Cubs and the Sox and the Bulls and the Blackhawks. The Bulls and the Blackhawks have big games. The Cubs and the Sox early in the season trying to establish the direction, and yet the voice you heard from Ryan Pace, from a sports executive standpoint in town, probably has the most at stake this week, next week, with the draft looming, than any other executive in town. And that's why what the Bears are doing and the direction they're headed is such a big deal. Even though this draft, when they're sitting at 20, not sexy, it's not a top 10 pick, it's not a number two pick, but it means a lot nonetheless for his future and for next season.
I just want to put this in perspective a little bit. Okay, so the Bears have the 20th pick in the draft, the 52nd pick in the draft, the 83rd pick in the draft. Then they pick at 164, and then they have four picks in the sixth round, which are 204, 208, 221, and 228.
Yeah.
So you can't even find pick 228 on the original draft value chart. It would be
right
beyond the seventh round, just because it ends at 224. The draft has expanded. So to keep that in mind. But if you add up the value of every pick that they have in this draft, the four sixth rounders, which again would be seventh rounders to Jimmy back in the day, that's worth 23 points, just to put it in perspective. That's not very much. But if you add up all their 850 points from 20 and you go to 52 and everything else, you come up with 1,453.8 points for their entire draft, which roughly could move you to 8, maybe 9. So if you traded your entire draft for one pick, you would have the 8th or 9th pick in this draft.
Well, that's the problem, because you would have to dip into next year's savings, if you will. Next year's draft, and maybe beyond that, to get
no
what
way
you
around
want.
Yep.
And do you want to do that? And is it a responsible thing to do that? Because I just don't think that it would be from a franchise standpoint. And I think this is the argument, too, that you hear that, okay, if you're George McCaskey or Ted Phillips or whoever is, you know, Ryan Pace's bosses, and those are the two that we see most regularly, do you step in if you are hearing conversations around Halas Hall? Oh, I walked by to get some coffee, and I heard them talking about trading next year's one and this year's draft to move up to number four. What do you think about that, George? Well, we can't have that. You know, where is the line? Is there a line, or do you have to empower your GM to do his job because you brought him back and do his job independently? I don't know about that, Molly. I think that you trust your employees to a certain degree based on how much independence they have earned. And when you have a general manager entering his seventh year on the job and he has yet to win a playoff game, and he's known more and most for the miss that he had at the number two spot at a quarterback by giving up all those assets for a quarterback that was a bust, I don't know how you in good conscience can let him do that again. So I would have limitations on what I would and wouldn't let him do if he's – so this is like, okay, you're coming back, you're going to draft for us, but it's conditional.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's fascinating to think that, you know, they tried to get Russell Wilson. So they offered everything they could come up with to get Russell Wilson. They offered all, you know, their next 3 years of draft picks. They're number one now. They're number one next year. They're number one. This is just via reports, right? And you can only go out the three drafts. You can't go into – we can't give you three picks down the road when someone else is running the team. So that's good that there's a limit to what you can give up. And as much as that was, you understood, well, you're talking about a guy that is a proven commodity. He is a franchise changer. He would change the way you were perceived, and he would change your ability to be able to win in your division and all the rest of it. When you're talking about guys that are unproven, when you're talking about guys that that haven't any kind of track record, now you're looking at, all right, well, at least you're getting the top guy at a certain position, so you don't mind giving up a couple of things there. But the reality of their situation is, and again, you know, if Mac Jones goes number three, is he being overdrafted? I would say maybe a round overdrafted. If he goes at number 15, is he a value because he didn't go at number three? Or do you still think he might be a guy that on a normal year would go lower than that? It's just you've got to look at the individual player, and you've got to be able to project what that guy, you know, to use Jerry Angelo's term, what the floor is as much as what the ceiling is. And if you're rolling the bones, someone's got to be able to tell you, no, don't do that. Now, one of the great things that Ryan Pace prides himself on is getting everyone's opinion, and we're all working together and there's collaboration. So it's everybody that has to collaborate, right? Is it George saying, hey, I stay out of the football business? Is it Ted saying, I can do the contract, but just let me know who I'm signing? And who makes this call? It's on Ryan Pace, period, end of story.
Okay, this is why it's important to surround yourself with people who will tell you when it's a bad idea or tell you what your limitations are. This is why it's important to hire, you know, people that aren't necessarily just yes men, because the distinction that you made is perhaps the most important one to make when you're talking about the Bears in the context of this draft as it relates to quarterbacks. You aren't considering giving up the future, mortgaging the future to move up to get Russell Wilson, a quarterback entering in the midst of his prime. You know, you're talking about doing all that to get a quarterback that has yet to play it down in the NFL and is a projection as much as anything. That's the distinction that needs reinforced each and every time we talk about the draft. That's external pressure that I think needs to be applied to the Bears to not do that again, not risk making that mistake. Maybe you're wrong. Maybe Trey Lance becomes Patrick Mahomes 2.0. Maybe Justin Fields is a guy that, you know, is Deshaun Watson, the equivalent of him on the field. But I don't know that you have that certainty that you can trust, especially from a front office that has been wrong before. So you're not getting Russell Wilson, and that has to give you as much caution as you should have if you consider moving all these assets to make that trade.
All right, the Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's start It's 312-644-6767. We've got Tim. He's in Hampshire, Illinois. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Tim.
Hey, good morning, guys. And I think this begs the question when you guys are talking about Pace. And he's done such a poor job. And if he's gonna mortgage our draft capital, our future, and he fails again, and he ultimately gets replaced, who's going to take that job with no draft capital? I mean, can we lure John Lynch away? He's not going to leave. That Brett Veach from the Chiefs. I mean, what guy in his right mind is going to come to the Bears without any draft capital and no future first-round picks? It's a death sentence.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think, though, you worry about that. And I think that there are always guys that want to step up. And there are tons of guys, young guys, unproven guys that are looking for a challenge and that want to make a name for themselves. I think that you'd have tons of people dying for that job because there's only 32 of them.
Tim, I respect your cynicism, but I don't think that Ryan Pace has polluted this job to the point where others wouldn't covet it. I mean, there would be a line that would be very long, Molly. We both know the industry well enough to know how this is a legacy job. You would ignore what has been done in the past, and you would want to jump at the opportunity to win in Chicago for the Bears in a way that would make you, you know, a potential legend in that town. So I don't think that Ryan Pace, whoever replaces him, is going to, you know, they're going to look at the job like, wow, this is barren. I can't win here. Everyone's going to think they can win here.
Bob is in Canaryville. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys. I was wondering, when is Ted Phillips going to catch some heat about this? Because isn't he part of the reason we're in this salary cap hell? Because we had to let go of Fuller.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like the Teflon man.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob. Thanks.
Yeah.
I think Ted Phillips received a lot of heat. I think Ted Phillips is an easy target. I don't think Ted Phillips has anything to do with the salary cap.
Well, yeah, they have their cap guy, and they have you know. Here's the problem, though, is they've poured ton. You know, you talk about the value of the job. Ryan Pace has been on this job for a very long time. This is his seventh year, going into his seventh year, and you know, David, I get it. You got to take the first three and you separate them from the next three. Ted's not the money guy anymore. They got a salary cap guy, but Ryan Pace is. He's a guy that is, I mean, that's almost a poster boy for why you'd want the Bears job, because you get chance after chance after chance, and you get to rebuild, and oh, he didn't hire that coach, and this is his guy, and guess what? They're 500. How can you fire him? I mean, goodness gracious, isn't that like who wouldn't want that gig?
He got seven drafts before he had to worry about winning a playoff game. Goodness sakes, where's my resume? Yeah, I'm updating my LinkedIn profile. That's exactly what you would want, that kind of support and kind of blind support from your bosses. And if you want to criticize Ted Phillips for anything, or George McCaskey along with him, I think it is that. It is that they have been more tolerant and the standard has not been high enough, regardless of the rhetoric, that you have brought back a general manager time and again, where there have been a couple previous times where you could point to and say, okay, not good enough, we're moving on, we're going a different direction. But here he is, ready to draft his seventh class.
That's extraordinary. It's usually it if you make the kind of mistakes that he's made, and you know, I mean, we don't have to sit here and go through all of them, but just look at the first-round picks, right? It's not very difficult to say that poor Kevin White never made it in the NFL and was hurt before, you know, he got on the field and never did anything. You know, you traded up for Leonard Floyd. What happened to him? Mitch Trubisky, that subject speaks for itself. And that's, I think, just the idea of Mitch is the reason that we're sitting here talking about how you don't want them to trade up, because they did that. They traded up one slot. When you find yourself at the top of a draft, you better take a quarterback. The idea is not to be back there. They got there. They earned it. And they moved up to take the first quarterback, and a Pro Bowler went afterward, and a Hall of Famer went after that. And they didn't even – they didn't even have a guy that that they would pick up the option year on. So it's hard to wonder, well, wait a minute, the guy that traded for Nick Foles, the guy that signed Mike Glennon, that paid for him, the guy that drafted Mitch, do we allow him to make another pick at that position? And you just heard him, well, I'm getting better as Italian evaluator, you learn.
Well,
learning on the job is great if you're like a Cub reporter trying to get a newspaper job, not if you're actually running the show for an NFL team.
Yeah, this isn't a job that you typically learn and you get trained on the job. And we'd like to find, you know, a comparison for the last executive who swung and missed and moved up in the draft and got another chance to swing and miss and move up in the draft. But there isn't really an example, because why? Those people are held accountable, and they typically don't get a second chance to take a Javi Baez-like swing at a quarterback and drafting him. And boy, you know, you talk about swing and misses, the whiff rate applies to general managers in this town as well. So that is the reality as we sit here 8 days before the draft.
All right, we got the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
The Bulls take their two-game winning streak on the road to Cleveland to face the Cavs. Given the Bulls' tenuous hold on the number 10 spot in the East, this qualifies as a must-win, right? Who's the key?
Definitely a must-win if you want to get into keep the number 10 spot and get into the play-ins. I think that the key... Okay, this is going to sound absurd, but stay with me. The key is by far Garrett Temple. I think Vooch, we know what we're going to get from. I think there's most guys on the court that you understand what they're going to give you. I think Garrett Temple is the guy that represents defense. That's what his calling card is at this point in his career. He can score you some points, but what he represents is a defensive effort. And he's the guy that helped keep Jason Tatum down with 14 points on 3 of 17 shooting against the Celtics. The Celtics had won 6 in a row, and they got 96 points in that game. It's got to be defense, and therefore it's got to be Garrett Temple, the guy that represents their great defensive effort. They have to keep teams under 100 points. They can't allow crap teams to score 130 points against them. So I think that if you look at 538, they got the Bulls at a 6% chance of making the playoffs. They've got Washington, who's behind them right now, 7% chance of making the playoffs. And Toronto's behind both of them right now. They got them as like an 18% chance of making the playoffs. So I don't think the Bulls are favored to be a playoff team right now because of Zach LaVine's injury. I think the only way that they get there is by increasing their defense. They have a very difficult schedule with whatever it is, 15 games to go. And it's the 7th toughest schedule in the league at this point. They've got to hold teams down in order to win games. You know what you're going to get from everybody else, but Garrett Temple represents defense, ergo the key.
I like that because I think they also, if he starts, they win as far as you look at the record when he is in the lineup. I also like the way that he hits the big three in the clutch when he needs to, like he did the other night. So I like Garrett Temple. I'm going to go with Kobe White. I'm going to say that Kobe White has to have a big game protecting the basketball, you know, maybe contributing a defensive steal like he did the other night down the stretch, which was key, hitting the big shot and playing freer without Zach LaVine there because they need him to step up in the way that he has. He's also going against Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, and the dynamic duo for the Cavaliers. You cannot lose this game, Chicago Bulls. You cannot lose this game and want to, you know, do some more scoreboard watching from the 10th seed spot, which isn't ideal, but it is what it is right now, as the athletes like to say. And you are stuck there at 10. So if you have any aspirations of extending the season into the postseason so you can let fans into the United Center, you better win tonight.
A pick six to end the half.
Adam Eaton received a one-game suspension and fine for, quote, aggressive actions and for inciting a bench-clearing incident with Cleveland last Thursday. What message is baseball trying to send with these suspensions over relatively minor melees? Does it feel like a new initiative?
It does. What message are they sending? Major League Baseball sending the messages, we want to bore you to death. We want you to go away and watch hockey or basketball or any other sport but ours, because we want to promote the idea of emotion and intensity, but we want to punish the expression of it. And that's what's happening with guys like Adam Eaton. And look at in Cincinnati, Nick Castellanos. My gosh, he just flexed and he got two games for trying to make the other team look bad, apparently. And the benches cleared. The benches didn't. I mean, nobody was hurt. Nobody was touched. It was a baseball fight. It was a taffy pull. They looked at each other crossly like, ooh, I'm going to get you after the game. Ooh, boy, I'm going to stare you down. It was a baseball fight. Come on, guys. This is nothing. This is ridiculous. They're talking about social distancing during the game and protocols that have to be followed. That's nonsense. You're on the field. You're playing. Let things happen. Let them unfold. Adam Eaton should not miss any games for what he did. It didn't rise to the level of a suspension. You want to fine him. It's only money. Okay. But don't take him out of the lineup.
I agree. Don't take him out of the lineup. And I agree that this is simply a new initiative. This is all they're saying here is it's all social distancing. Listen, don't cause a super spreader event. That's exactly what this is. Don't do anything that would create a clearing of benches. So don't have any confrontation. You may say that's boring. They're saying it's pandemic. They're just trying to prevent the super spreader at second base. That's all this is. And God bless them for being aware of it. But it is so over the top. It's just not, you know, find a guy if you have to. You know, Wilson Contreras got fined. Do not suspend him. I think that's nonsense, although I do like the idea of Louis Robert moving up in the lineup. I just got to tell you, it is nothing to do with anything other than the super spreader.
A pick six of 100 yards!
Do you believe Andrew Vaughn is a candidate to go down to the minor leagues once the season starts in May? If he can't get regular at-bats at the major league level, would he be better off as an everyday player at a lower level?
Wow, that is kind of mean, to be honest with you, that question. So the minor leagues are supposed to start in May, and then you'll have a place to send someone. Why send him to batting practice in Schaumburg if you feel that he'd be better served to get a couple weeks of hitting every day? I don't think we're there yet. I don't think it's there yet. But I think if his struggles continue and you get into a minor league season, it might be wise to send him down and make sure that he's getting those regular at-bats, because part of the problem now is he's not getting the regular at-bats. We're going to talk to Ozzie a little later. I know that they've talked about the idea that Robin Ventura went 0 for 34 or 0 for 35 or something as a rookie and look at his career. But I think that you need all hands on deck in this season, especially with Loy out. And if you can't find a place for the guy to play, maybe it's wiser to let him play every day, and then he can come back and maybe be more prepared.
Well, I like everything about Andrew Vaughn. I like his willingness to play left field. I like his ability to play out there and show some athletic skills like he has. He's been more of an asset than liability in the field. I even like his number, 25. That's a good number for a baseball player. I do not like the fact that he's hitting 188. I don't think anybody does. But it's only 32 at-bats. Yes, you can say that. And they have been kind of inconsistent and irregular. And I don't know why he hasn't been out there more regularly. And that's a question for Tony La Russa. He's addressed, but they have a lot of guys that want to get into the lineup. Why? Well, sometimes I don't know. I do think you have to leave that option open of sending him down if he doesn't start to show more signs of life at the plate. That's why he's here. This isn't a developmental process. This isn't a season that you can afford to have many guys who are hitting 188 as your either left fielder or designated hitter. So if he can establish some consistency and regain some confidence by going to AAA when AAA begins, then you do it. It doesn't have to be permanent. It can be a temporary thing. He's still a very young man. I think that when you look at 23 years old, he needs some seasoning. So season him, but bring him back. And I still think that Andrew Vaughn can be a big part of this White Sox offense once things get really going.
Pick six.
Came in from the cold, literally, yesterday to play first base. He was out in left field, and he made an unbelievable play at first base. And didn't Abreu's bat awaken as a DH? I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
We need to get to that Mercedes first base decision later, though. That's something we need to revisit.
Pick six.
How long should the Cubs stick with Ian Happ in the leadoff spot? Would you consider dropping him if he doesn't increase production, or are you hesitant to open up an old boogeyman spot?
I'm not hesitant to do anything if I'm David Ross and I'm looking at my team and I'm worried about their consistency offensively, which is something you have to be worried about each and every game until you really snap out of it in a way that rebuilds some confidence. Yeah, Ian Happ, there's not owed the leadoff spot. I think maybe he likes leading off. Who wouldn't? But if it means that somebody else might look better there, maybe Anthony Rizzo gets a shot there again. Maybe somebody else comes to mind. There aren't a lot of obvious candidates with Nico Horner still relegated to the alternate site in South Bend. I wonder how he's enjoying that stint, by the way. But I don't think that Ian Happ has a season-long contract or agreement or commitment to lead off. If it makes sense to move him down in the order, move him down in the order, because this is an offense that is going to require, I think, constant tinkering. So tinker away, David Ross.
Have you sent him anything down in South Bend, David? It would be a shock to find out that you hadn't told Nico at least a list of great places to go.
I have my people checking on him regularly. Yeah, have my peeps.
That makes sense. I don't know how this turned into a Nico Horner question, but if that's what
either.
It takes, if that's what it takes. Ian Happ, listen, I hate the idea of them trying to find a leadoff guy again, and we're going back to where's Dexter Fowler? Oh, he got injured. Enough is enough, but Ian Happ is not hitting very well, and if it would help him to move down in the lineup and if it would help someone else to get more opportunity, then you do that. I think it's all on the table when you're under 500.
Can you believe this? Pick six!
Mets eights, Jacob DeGrom asked and received for an extra day's rest, meaning he won't pitch against the Cubs this series. A big break for the Cubs. Should the Cubs feel lucky or insulted to face Joey Lucchesi instead? Do you think the Mets had anything to do with believing they need DeGrom more to beat the Nationals on Friday than the light-hitting Cubs on Thursday?
Ooh, Lucchesi is going to get his, I'll tell you that. You got to go after this guy. You got to make him pay. DeGrom is the coward at this point. He's a guy that just was afraid of facing that Cubs lineup, and we all know it. He's nothing but a paper tiger. And he wants to take on Washington because he knows they have some injuries. If Juan Soto was there, he wouldn't be desperate to play against. No, never mind. No, DeGrom's maybe the best pitcher in baseball, and it's a lucky break to avoid him. And frankly, if the Cubs win the game, then they have made a statement. Not a must win, but they have made a statement. And if the Mets win the game with Joey Lucchesi, then shame on you, Cubs.
Yeah, he is the best pitcher in baseball, or at least in the top three. And I did want to see him pitch at Wrigley Field because I appreciate greatness, and everyone should feel a little bit cheated that he asked for the day off and he wants to move to Friday, because you want to see the best when they come through town. And I know there may be other opportunities for the Mets to showcase and put Jacob DeGrom on the mound against the Cubs. I don't think he's ducking Ian Happ, Anthony Rizzo, and Chris Bryant, certainly not Javi Baez. I think you would want to face him and this Cub lineup. But it's a kind of disappointing. And now the Cubs have an opportunity to sweep. They need to sweep today because they're not going to face DeGrom, and it's a lucky break for them.
That is a pick six.
What did you make of Greg Rosenthal recently rating all of the league's current GMs based on their draft results on the NFL's website? How about Ryan Pace ranking 20th, mainly due to nine teams not yet having a track record? Can you believe Pace was deemed better than the Eagles, Giants, and Raiders? Do you agree with the comment, quote, the lack of a cohesive plan on offense is in an offensive first league is all too apparent?
Now, you talk about mean-spirited questions. Now, this is the epitome of the mean-spirited questions that we sometimes encounter in this exercise. But so you're telling me this is basically a ranking of 23 teams, Molly. It's not all 32. This is, if you're eliminating nine from the equation, see, when you say Ryan Pace finished 20th in a ranking, that doesn't sound so bad. It's like, all right, well, fine. He hasn't won a playoff game. But 20th out of 23, then you start to wonder, Eagles, Giants, and Raiders, what has he done better than those teams? I don't know. I'm not very high on the Bears brass right now. I don't think it's 8 days before the draft when you start to study things that have happened, there's any right to be. So I think 20th seems a little high.
I got to tell you, I thought 20th was pretty good. I was like, wow, that's great. 20th out of 32 teams? There are other teams that bad? And then I looked at it, and okay, there's nine teams that you can't count. Well, that's not as good then. And then I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, Howie Roseman? I get it. There's recency bias. But didn't they win a Super Bowl? Didn't they actually come into Chicago and beat the Bears in the playoffs the year after with the Cody Parkey double doink? And what was the contract they gave Cody Parkey again? I don't think we're doing specialists, so we won't get a chance to question that move. But goodness gracious, Ryan Pace is 7 years in, and he's ranked 20 out of 23? That doesn't seem like it's the kind of guy you want. And I understand, David, if you take the first 3 years, now stay with me, and then you separate them from the next three, and you kick, and you times that by the amount of playoff wins,
exactly,
then you're definitely not going to be making the – what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh?
And if you have lunch with the guy and you realize how charming he is, and there's the hair, and then there's the, well,
there's,
you know,
great hair. Have we done enough at the quarterback position? No. Have we won enough games? No. But other than that, everything is just glorious and fantastic.
Peachy. Yeah.
Just fantastic. So, yeah, big draft for Ryan Pace, one that we're going to look back on and really marvel at. So there you go. That's the pick six. Oh my gosh, it's a difficult life sometimes, David. It's hard to figure out how some people are graded on a scale and other people seem to be criticized on a scale. I don't know. It just it kind of burns you when you think about it in that context. That hey, there was a couple guys worse than him. That doesn't seem like the most I don't know, greatest.
No way to do business. Really?
It's not any way to do business. Thank you. That's a good way of putting it. All right, we're going to talk some baseball next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
I wonder if you understand the overindulgence of people like myself and some fans about the early season slump.
I don't know how to control the outside narrative. Tell people to hold tight, I guess. You'll find a way on the radio, I know.
It's just me. I'm speaking for me alone.
Okay. Well, then no comment.
Inside the Clubhouse, co-host alongside our own David Hall.
We've got a lot of baseball conversation to cover in the next 2 hours. How are you doing this morning, buddy?
Great being with you, like we are every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball on Inside the Clubhouse.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce has the first hard question.
With Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce Levine brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. Two gutty performances both on the South Side team and the North Side team. Where would you like to begin today?
I just want to know who's going to start today for the White Sox. Do they have a player? Is there anyone that actually will start? Is Andrew Vaughn available? He seems to be playing everywhere else.
Well, you know, the Yerminator is available again. He's had a day to I heard he's starting in center field. Now that he has started, he pitched one game against Boston, and then he played first base for a little while before Tony said it was time to get him out yesterday. Maybe center field, shortstop. But in all seriousness, Jonathan Stever is available. They also have Ronaldo Lopez. So they're gonna come up with a starter. Certainly, it's not going to come out of the bullpen because they have had to pitch 12 innings over the last two games, and that is plenty. They managed it pretty well, but that's a lot of work for that bullpen over the rest of the season.
Bruce, before we get to the Cubs, let's talk about the Mercedes move for a second. So he starts at first base. He doesn't make a play, drop the ball. Bad throw from Madrigal, but is a play that I think Jose Abreu probably makes. It was a risk putting him there, and I think that it turned out to be a liability. Then Tony La Russa removed him. I know he fouled the ball off his foot, but it said it wasn't injury-related. It was because he, quote, negative vibes that he sensed coming from mm-hmm. Mercedes. How unusual is that for a manager to make a move in-game like that because of that reason?
That's an instinct. And, many managers, people have been in the game for a long time, they rely on instinct, not just numbers or what they're seeing at the present moment. That's what he saw. He saw a guy that was struggling, that felt, the negativity from the not being able to catch that ball and following the ball off of his foot. He got bad vibes. I mean, I've gotten them before, too. I've had partners that have given me bad vibes. Thank God it's not you, David, but...
Bruce, name the partners. Let's go. Let's have it.
Oh, we don't have time for that.
That many.
No, I mean, it's mostly the other way around. That's why David got stuck with me. But in reality, the situation is that, instinctively, he didn't want him to have any more negative parts of the day. He hasn't played a position since spring training. He didn't play first base at all. I mean, he was a catcher in spring training. So, he felt the experiment was over with and there was a game to win. And thank goodness that move was made because there was a great play by Vaughn with a ton of people on base late in the game that the Yerminator most likely would not have made. And that could have been a game that turned around in an ugly way for the White Sox.
I got to be honest with you. If I'm Cleveland, I'm wondering how we had so many guys running around the bases and failed to score runs. Seemed like they had nine walks and three booted balls.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to have that many guys on base and to not win a game. I mean, it's almost like that's a good vibe.
It was an ugly game.
Yeah.
It was an ugly game. The White Sox made three errors. They had, the Grandal, couple of interference calls. That was ugly. And then the base running by the Indians. Again, no excuses, but none of us have played in the kind of weather that the Indians and the Cubs played in. Indian Sox and Cubs and Mets played in. So I'm giving them a little bit of a pass because that was some tough conditions to play in for both teams yesterday.
Yeah, and I thought it was cool, Bruce. Jake Arrieta takes the mound, sleeveless like many expected. Just it was tough guy Tuesday. But I felt like the biggest takeaway, his five innings were great, and we can debate whether or not he is the de facto ace. But Craig Kimbrel, again, comes up with his fourth save. Yeah, it was a little bit more tricky last night, a little bit more used to, like the Kimbrel we have seen on occasion. He walked a couple guys, gave up a hit, but he got out of it. His resurgence has been as important as any development, I think, on that pitching staff.
Yeah, you're right, David. And, that little hit to the left field, that was the first hit he's given up all year. I mean, the guy has just been fantastic. And to his credit, as you said, it was clunky, the outing, but he worked out of his own damage. And you see, body language-wise, you guys watch the game as closely as all of us doing fans do. Body language-wise, it's a different guy. It's back to being the guy that we've seen before. Certainly, people will say, well, yeah, you're talking about results. But those results are in his mind before they take place. And that's so essential for any athlete, baseball athlete in particular, that you see that confidence exude, that no matter what situation they're going to be in, they're going to take care of it. And you see that with Craig Kimbrell this year.
When we talk about DeGrom ducking the Cubs, is that a legit thing? You think he's just afraid of striking
afraid
out?
Afraid of their offense? Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
He's afraid he would set the all-time strikeout record. Is that what you're saying? And be out there too long? No. I mean, that's – look.
It's an insult then? It's either a compliment or an insult. There's only two options.
I think, you know, it's just he might need another day because he has been striking out so many people. And, you know, he's not a machine. I just think the guy's a little worn, you know, from – what is it, back-to-back 14 strikeouts, you know, for this guy? Probably, you know, the best – pitcher of the last 7, 8, 10 years taking over for Kershaw. He's just fantastic. So I wouldn't look at it either way. I just say that he needs an extra day. But the Mets might be a challenge for the Cubs right now as far as trying to score runs. So the Cubs have a really nice opportunity here if they can't put a few runs up to win a series or sweep a series because of the fact that the Mets are really challenged when it comes to offense. Really good pitching. They have a good bullpen, but scoring runs is a big problem for them as well.
How big of a start is this for Zach Davies, Bruce? And does the Cubs staff really have an ace at this point until Kyle Hendricks starts to resemble the pitcher that we know he can be?
Yeah, Arrieta is the ace. And if you see him pitching to the lower quadrants like he has, just in precision-wise, you know, hitting the lower inside and outside quadrants of the strike zone, it's really fun to watch. And I think it's a huge compliment to Jake Arrieta, the front office of the Cubs and the Cubs coaching staff for watching this version of Arrieta. Again, 5 innings last night. It was efficient. It wasn't pretty the whole time, but it was efficient enough on a cold night to get the job done. He's been their best pitcher. He's won 3 ball games. He's pitched very well each time out. And just reinventing himself, coming out as this sinker ball pitcher now rather than the dominating fastball and slider, that is something to watch. So he is that guy. And Davies does have to straighten out tonight. I think it's the right team for him. So let's see how this works out for him this evening. But it should be a good night for Zach Davies. I know you would never bring this tape back tomorrow if it doesn't work out.
No, wrong show. Hey, Bruce, thanks to Todd. We love you, buddy.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right, have a great day.
You got that one all ready to go? Make sure.
Rage. Yeah, we're all ready to go. We're ready to go with that one tomorrow. Yeah. That'd be fun. Or Saturday morning at the very least, yeah. That'd be fun.
That's great. That's a lot of fun. All right, let's stay with it. Let's talk some baseball. I'm very curious if anybody out there believes that Abreu seemed more relaxed as a DH. When a guy has that kind of big game, maybe a way of getting Andrew Vaughn in is letting him play first. Would you stay with that or not?
And I also want to ask, did people find it as curious as I did that La Russa removed Mercedes in the fifth inning of a game because he was exhibiting a negative vibe? He did make an error. He was a liability defensively, but that was a strange move, I thought, given the time of the game when he made it.
312-644-6767, Mullion Hall on the score.
The Cubs game live on your mobile device.
Can you believe it?
Wow. Yes.
Magnifico!
If you live in the Chicago area, you can take the Cubs with you on your mobile device or smart speaker through the Odyssey app.
It's got a chance. Cubs win.
Download the Odyssey app now.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.